Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. Over 180,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. For you, the listeners of Book Geeks Uncompromised, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a 30-day free trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. This week, I want to recommend Spellslinger by Sebastian de Castell. Looks like an interesting story about a spellcaster. I don't know if they call them wizards in this book yet, but a spellcaster who must
face a spell slinger.
Ooh, that could be interesting.
Plot twist.
But apparently he is facing a spell slinger named Kellen, I believe.
Called it.
Sounds good. He is facing his first duel and proving his worth as a spellcaster. There's just one problem. His magic is fading. So he is on his way to try to find a way to pass the mage trials. He'll risk anything and everything, even his own life, in search of a way to restore his magic. Sounds interesting. And we know Sebastian de Castell because we've read his books before.
Great Coat series.
Yes. Yeah.
I think I'm one book shy of finishing that series. So now's a good time to jump into his other series.
Well, there you go.
And I've heard great things about Spellslinger, too. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that one. Again, that is audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc for a free 30-day trial and one free book. audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. Welcome to Book Geeks Uncompromised.
The entire series.
I don't know what it was about this book. I loved it so much.
How do I know more about it than you do? And it's your number
one
book.
I'm bad with names, okay?
Spoilers, gosh.
And we are ready for some reading.
When in doubt, be lame.
Everyone buckle in.
Welcome back to Book Geeks Uncompromised, where we make reading less solitary. This is episode 94, Woo. Where we review The City of Lies by Sam Hawke. I am Danny, here with Greg.
Hello.
To talk about books.
Yay. It is definitely not The City of Truths. That is for sure.
I mean, some people tell the truth.
Some people do.
Not many.
But you don't know when.
Yeah, you don't know
when. That's the problem with A City of Lies. You know, they probably shouldn't have named it that. Like as naming your city as The City of Lies, I mean, that
well,
just calls
for... Well, I don't think
they
called it that.
Oh, that's true. They didn't.
I know.
I'm saying if someone actually named their city City of Lies, you're expecting it to be bad from the beginning, right?
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you just might as well call it City of Happiness, because then maybe I don't know.
Then you're lying, and it's actually a city of lies.
Well, then it would fit.
City of Lyception.
Lyception, there you go. Then it actually fits. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, I started a takeover on our own website.
Ooh.
Trying to do TV reviews.
Oh, I did see that. If you're letting me do TV reviews, I'll do TV reviews.
It was definitely not that the book that I read that, while good, I had nothing to say about it, and I needed a post.
I watch plenty of fantasy or sci-fi related shows. I can start posting some good stuff.
I will hand the reins to you then.
Oh my gosh.
No, we spent Saturday last week, mm-hmm. The last week as we're recording this, but mm-hmm. I guess it'll be like two Saturdays ago when this comes out.
There
was one day where we watched all of The Haunting of Hill House, which everybody's talking about online right now because it's amazing. That was a fantastic story. I'm a big chicken, and I might have screamed out loud in episode 8, and not even like an oh shit or anything like that. Like a straight out screaming for my life. Bad guys coming for me. Yeah.
Fun. But what is it about? What's kind of a basic synopsis?
The Hill House.
The Hill House. All right. There we go. That's enough.
Yeah, I think it's a like 150-something-year-old house that there's this family that flip houses for a living. They go into these houses, they repair them, then sell them. This is their most ambitious project yet in the Hill House.
Of course.
So as happens in scary movies and in old houses in general,
right.
The kids start seeing weird things.
Yep.
And then it kind of fast forwards to 26 years later, to 2018, these kids are all adults, and they're still dealing with some of the effects of the things that happened in Hill
Jesus.
House. So it's their story currently with flashbacks of what happened and what came of the night their mother died.
Oh my gosh.
It's really, really good.
I know. I'm more of a wimp when it comes to those than you are, so.
I don't know. I'm pretty wimpy. And this story is worth it.
The thing is, you purposely sat down and watched the It movies. Now, you'd made a deal with your husband. Yeah. That's why you did.
I forget what the deal was.
It was, he read Senseless Sins.
Oh, that's what it was.
He read Senseless Sins and actually enjoyed it. But then you had to watch the It movies. Yeah, no, I don't want to watch those. I'm going to find any excuse I have not to watch them because I'm a wimp. Like even he was talking about those and like y'all were talking about this one that it had scary moments, but it wasn't bad. Like there's moments he would talk about, yeah, there's gross moments. I don't want to see those either.
That one didn't even really have so many gross moments. There was a lot of mold at one point. I mean, that was about as gross as it got. There was some blood.
It's more
but
of
it wasn't
like,
gory.
It's like ugly, gory stuff. We're seeing things misshapen and blah, and yeah.
I mean, you had like some like old, like decayed ghost type stuff.
Like that's not bad.
It wasn't like a gore fest with blood going everywhere. It wasn't like that.
Right. Like a Freddy versus like a Freddy movie or a Jason movie. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
As far as characters that die, I mean, there's only a handful of characters that actually die in the movie.
Right.
I mean, the mother's one.
Yeah. Like I said, the only horror movies I've ever really watched, like I saw the first Saw movie forever ago.
Yeah.
That wasn't really scary, just more of torture porn.
Yeah, it's intense.
Yeah, just more intense than anything else. I saw, I saw all the Jason movies that me and you watched forever ago when our stepdad showed them to us.
I vaguely remember those.
I remember those being dumb because, like, it was just the stupid teenager ran and tripped, and it's just like, well, that's why you died. You tripped for no reason. There was, like, no rocks on the ground. Why did you trip? Then I remember actually laughing at the Freddy versus Jason movie. Because
if I ever watched that one.
I think you did, but it was so stupid. It was so stupid it was funny. It was just one of those, like, really, this is a horror movie? Why?
So how was your week?
My week wasn't
with your not doing anything with scary stuff. Like, how are you even into Halloween?
I don't get into Halloween. That's what I do.
For shame.
How dare I?
For shame.
I don't have anything against Halloween. I've just never been a scary things person. Like, Halloween was always the sweet I get candy day. That's what I liked about Halloween. And now
I am looking forward to my tax cut of my children's candy.
Yeah, there you go. As I was going to say, that's the nice things about having nieces and nephews is stealing out of their candy. And eventually when I have my own kids, stealing from theirs. So other than that, my past couple weeks have been filled with mostly, and this is fantasy related, writing my D&D campaign. Working on that has been fun.
Very nice.
It's not too bad. Anyone who has played a D&D game or ran a D&D game knows how hard it is. Because
it sounds like a lot of work.
It is. I think if I had a smaller group, it wouldn't be as bad. But I've got 7 players, which for experienced DMs is a lot. So as a new dungeon master, it's even more because I'm using an adventure. I'm basing off an adventure. I'm not following it word for word. But I'm using a lot of its areas, a lot of its plot. But I'm having to up the difficulty in all the areas because the adventure is really set for maybe a 4-person group. I've got a 7-person group, and I've got multiple characters that they can do multiple attacks. Some got spells, some have different things. So I've got to find ways to challenge all of them and make it fun. So there's been a lot of planning, and I've got the day after this recording, the day we're airing? Yeah, words.
Words.
I've got not necessarily it's going to be a 24-hour session, but we're going to start playing at like 9 a.m. and then go till we feel like it.
See how far you can go.
We've done this one time before. We're probably going to do it like once a month where we'll do an all-day kind of game. The last time we did it, we started playing around 10, 11 a.m. and went till 3 a.m. the next morning.
Ooh.
We had like an hour or two for lunch.
Right.
But yeah, no, by the end of it, one person had gone home. And 2 others were asleep on the couch, and 1 was asleep on the floor.
Wow.
And they were like, hey, we should probably stop for the night.
Right. All right, I say we get into some news.
Ooh, all right, news.
Okay, so I think we've had a story really similar to this before,
mm-hmm.
but it is a new one. A library copy of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is returned 46 years overdue.
I think there was something like that a few months ago.
I think it was almost a year ago.
Yeah, it was a while back. I do remember reporting something about some book being turned in super late, but that's awesome. So, how many years was it?
46.
46.
So this woman, Lee Dunham, was going through boxes at her grandparents' house when she found the book and soon realized that it was a library book checked out in July 1972. she thinks it was her dad's.
Yeah.
And apparently that was the same summer that he met her mom.
Oh.
So I think that's why he got so distracted that he couldn't return his library book.
Of course. It's not because he was a teenager and forgot.
But he passed away, I think it said in 2002.
No.
He passed away. So she returned the book via the overnight book drop with a note apologizing for its lateness, which it sounds like she returned it over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would have put that in the book drop.
No, I would have wanted to walk in there and see their faces.
Yeah, okay. Honestly, though, I don't know that I'd have returned it at all.
That's true. That's true.
Like, at 46 years, especially going from the 70s to now, where everything's on barcodes.
Yeah.
Like, it's not in their system. They long ago gave it up for lost.
Yeah, 100%.
A long, long time ago.
That's funny. Yeah, no, I don't think I would have. I don't know if I would have returned it either. But if I was going to, I'd do it when they're there just to go, hey, I found this. I think it's yours.
Did the stamp that say Our City Library kind of clue you in?
You know, it's only from the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, thanks That's for funny. Your diligence.
Right. I mean, yeah, I don't know why they would even keep it.
They did, though. They said they put it back on the shelf, which I don't understand why, because they would have had to pay to have it barcoded.
Yeah, exactly. They would have had to redo it all. So I would just, if I found out who it was, I would just take it back to him and say, you could keep this one.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the point in keeping it? And it was Huckleberry Finn. Everybody's got a copy of Huckleberry Finn somewhere.
I know. I have one.
I have
one copy.
I don't.
Maybe two, actually. I might have a second copy.
You have my copy. You can have. I don't want it.
Well, it's actually like the children's version.
Yeah.
So your copy.
My copy. Does it have pictures?
It does.
Oh, yes.
It's got the little black and white illustrations.
Only way I get through any of these books that we read. They have to have pictures. And if they don't, Danny draws them beforehand so I can stay entertained.
And I am such a great artist.
She's fantastic.
No, I'm not. Okay, so let's see. Okay, so George R. R. Martin revealed, I guess, sort of, a political message in Game of Thrones. So during a cover shoot for a recent issue of T Magazine, New York Times got to ask a few questions of Martin when, I think it was one of the columnists asked Martin about his show's connection to climate change. Martin confirmed that in a very broad sense, there's a certain parallel there. He said, the people of Westeros are fighting their individual battles over power and status and wealth, and those are so distracting them that they're ignoring the threat of winter is coming, which has the potential to destroy all of them and to destroy their world. And there's a great parallel there to, I think, what I see this planet doing here, where we're fighting our own battles. TLDR, when climate change is a thing.
Right.
it goes on and on. So the White Walkers are actually climate change.
Right. Yeah, they're not actual zombies. Spoiler alert for the end of Game of Thrones.
I don't know. Like, I don't mind that parallel being there at all, but I wonder how much of it was sort of J.K. Rowling, where it's like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure. There's a parallel there.
That's what it sounds like. He says in a broad sense, so it definitely sounds, he's like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Not an intentional writing that he put in. It doesn't sound like it was something he planned. So, yeah, I could definitely see it, that if you wanted to go with it that way, but I don't think the book was intentionally...
I mean, I guess he's the only one that actually knows, but it doesn't sound like that to me. It sounded like it was, oh, hey, yeah, you see that. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, let's say that.
I like that. I take your idea. Yeah. I mean, it fits in ways. It's not.
Because wasn't it supposed to have been inspired by the War of the Roses?
I think so, yeah.
So there's not a whole lot of climate change in the War of the Roses.
You know, winter is coming can be seen as such a broad term, too. That can be seen as actual winter is coming, or it can be dark times are ahead, or it can be, you know, you could turn it a couple different ways to mean a couple different things. So climate change can fit as well, almost to literal, you know, climate change is getting screwed up so much the seasons are going to be wackadoo.
Right. No, like I said, I agree. No, it fits, no. And I don't hate the parallel being there.
Yeah. It's all of Game of Thrones is a prediction to our future, because Doesn't in the Game of Thrones world, their seasons last for like years sometimes?
Yes.
That's it. It's a prediction of what's going to happen to us in the future.
That's what it is.
Because our climate is screwing up so much.
They're still relatively stable. They just last forever.
They just last forever, yeah.
So
yeah.
Then it wouldn't be us messing up our climate so much as having a new relationship with the sun.
Well, we're going to screw it up so much that it's going to knock us out of orbit.
They wouldn't knock us out of orbit. And I'm not an astrophysicist, so ask Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah,
but I would think it would have to be more... Like, we would have to spin at the same rate, so the day-night cycle is the same, but we would have to actually revolve around the sun much slower.
Yeah, we'd have to have, like, a longer...
But if it's longer, then our weather would be altered, because we'd be further from the sun, so it would be colder in general. So it would just have to be the same distance.
There'd be years we're closer to the sun, and then years we're not.
Right, so it would be the same orbit that we're on now.
Yeah, just slower.
We move through it slower. We spin at the same rate, so the day-night cycle stays the same, but we actually revolve around the sun slower. That's what it is. We scienced Game of Thrones.
Oh my gosh, we scienced the shit out of it.
Me and my associate's degree, we totally scienced it.
And my high school diploma, yeah. Oh, man. No, that's cool. I mean, people make draws to books all the time, and they're, like you said, J.K. Rowling did, so... Ask.
That's a new verb.
There you go. J.K. Rowling it.
Okay. Two more stories, I believe. One, we'll go with Pinocchio. Yeah. So, Del Toro. He is going to be directing a Pinocchio movie for Netflix. He says, in our story, Pinocchio is an innocent soul with an uncaring father who gets lost in a world he cannot comprehend. He embarks on an extraordinary journey that leaves him with a deep... understanding of his father and the real world. This is going to be a stop motion animated musical set in Italy during the 1930s.
I was excited till I heard stop motion.
Yeah, that does not tend to be my favorite mode of animation, but I'm interested in the darker spin.
Yeah, that is definitely interesting.
And I think Del Toro is definitely the person to do that.
Oh yeah, he's a well-known. Even if we can't pronounce his first name, we apologize. He is a well-known in directing in the film world.
Yeah, especially for darker stories.
Yeah, and the story sounds interesting. Like I said, as soon as I heard stop motion, I went ugh.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people love Nightmare Before Christmas. I couldn't get into it because I don't like the style. I don't like the animation clay style stop motion stuff. I'm just not a fan of it. Movie wise, it doesn't look good to me. And maybe this one will. Maybe it'll look good. I don't know. But
with the art style that I've seen pictures of so far, I think it'll really work with it. Okay. It pairs well with it. But I think if you don't like this style, then it might still not do anything for you specifically.
Yeah. Because I mean, there's like Nightmare Before Christmas. Coraline was another one, I think it was called.
Right.
All beautiful looking. There was one that came out not too long ago, like a year or so ago. It was another one. Probably made by Tim Burton. Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. The darker setting of the story sounds interesting. We should see. We should see how people like it. Yeah, maybe. Like I said, I'll see.
All right, and finally, we got some news on the series finale for a series of unfortunate events Netflix series, which may have a different ending than the books.
Okay.
So I have not read the books. Mm-hmm. Do you remember much of the ending?
I remember a little bit. I remember it being very open-ended.
Okay.
In a way that it's been years since I've read it. But I remember just kind of being like, oh, okay. Like, it fit for the series. It fit for the series. It fit for how the series was, like, stylistically. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it was kind of nothing was really resolved. But it fit the series so well, it was like, I can't expect anything less. It came out right. I'm interested to see what they do.
Yes, the showrunner, Barry Sonnenfeld, spoke to Entertainment Weekly and said that he worked with his writers and the actual author... What's his name? Daniel Handler, I think is
Daniel
his real
Handler,
name.
Daniel Handler, yeah.
To craft an ending that remained true to the final book, but also expanded on it as well. So from what it sounds like, they're trying to give more closure to the audience than the end did.
Yeah, than the actual book did. The 13th book did. Yeah, that sucks to hear.
So finish season two.
Oh, yes, I know y'all need to. You and Jordan both need to finish it because it was good.
It's a really good show.
It's so good.
With casting just totally on point.
Casting was perfect. And that kind of makes me sad to think that there's going to be, that it had to end. And I'm okay with it ending because it's a story and it needs to.
It's coming to its natural end with the end of the book. So it does not need to be dragged on.
No, it doesn't.
Let it die.
100%. At the same time, I want more.
But it's a series of unfortunate events. The final unfortunate event is that it ends.
Exactly. Or maybe it doesn't.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So, no, that's, it's, I love Neil Patrick Harris. I love Patrick Warburton. I love
Weren't you really skeptical about Neil Patrick Harris?
I was, yes. Well, first, as Count Olaf. Count Olaf. The first time I heard Neil Patrick Harris was going to do it, I was worried. Because he is, Count Olaf was never really funny in the books. From what I remember, all of his henchmen were. They were all goofy because they had their own little quirks and different stuff about them was funny. And I guess I was also colored by Jim Carrey's Count Olaf. Because while I love Jim Carrey and his performance in that was fine, that wasn't Count Olaf. That was a over-the-top, hilarious Count Olaf. And Count Olaf, Neil Patrick Harris has done better about doing the menacing part of Count Olaf.
He has funny moments, but not... because the character's funny, but because that's so messed up that I'm laughing about it.
Oh, yeah. He's terrible. A terrible human being. And Neil Patrick Harris does it really well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no. Neil Patrick Harris definitely stepped up his game. I already loved him before. I love him even more now. I can't even believe that. I love Jude Law. He did the original voice for Lemony Snicket in the movie, which was fine. Patrick Warburton.
Oh my gosh.
He
was born for that role.
This story, this type of style story, was made for him. Just the monotone, lackadaisical, humorous. Oh god, it's so perfect, and he's perfect for that role. And he ties it every time he's on screen. It's more.
Yay, he's back.
Yeah, I've loved him ever
since.
Which
I've never wanted, more monotone monologues.
Yeah, exactly.
But I want more
ever since
Patrick Warburton monologues.
Ever since he was Krunk in The Emperor's New Groove, I've just loved that man. He's the best. So I'm sad to hear the show does have an ending. But at the same time, a show's got to end.
Especially when it's based on a book series that does end.
Right. So,
because when you don't do that, you end up with things like The Cursed Child.
Yes, you do. Or, as much as I love the show, Supernatural drags on.
Yeah.
It's got to have an ending, eventually.
Okay.
Or nobody dies.
So, nobody ever. Well, they do, but then they come back.
Not Sam and Dean.
You don't believe them.
Not Sam and Dean.
Like, they're coming back. The show got renewed. You know they're coming back.
Like, the series finale, everyone could die, and I still won't trust it. They could all, the world explodes. Well, nope, they'll do it.
And then occasionally, I think they did it this season. They'll kill a character, and then the actor still comes back as a different character.
They're like, we like that actor so much that we got to keep him around. All right.
Okay, so City of Lies by Sam Hawk.
Yes.
Time to jump to the spoiler free review, reading the synopsis off of Goodreads. I was 7 years old the first time my uncle poisoned me. Rude. Outwardly, Jovan is the lifelong friend of the Chancellor's charming, irresponsible heir. Quiet, forgettable. In secret, he's a master of poisons and chemicals, trained to protect the Chancellor's family from treachery. When the Chancellor succumbs to an unknown poison and an army lays siege to the city, Jovan and his sister Kalina must protect the heir and save their city-state. But treachery lurks in every corner, and the ancient spirits of the land are rising and angry.
Ooh.
It's basically exactly what that said. There's the Chancellor is murdered at the beginning of the book. I mean, there's kind of some talk of, well, maybe it was a disease that only he got. And I mean, it kind of explains that, but like, you know from the start that that's not going on at all.
Right.
Like, you know he was poisoned, but the dude was murdered.
The poison. Poison made for Cusco. Sorry, go
poison
ahead.
Made for the Chancellor.
Right.
There's more to the story. That, more secrets are uncovered as the story goes along. But that's really the gist of it. There's both the kind of whodunit murder mystery.
Alongside
crap, we just sent away our army to deal with this other stuff, and now we're under siege.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some political intrigue. Yeah. Not heavy on that. It's more mystery.
Yeah, it's definitely
more
a lot
mystery
more
mystery fantasy.
It's definitely a lot more mystery fantasy of the, oh crap, this happened. We're in a really crappy situation. We need to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
we need to solve this and solve it quick kind of thing.
Yeah, so we'll talk about the world building some. So Celasta is that the name of the nation or just the name of the city?
I want to say that's the city. I believe it's the city. Yeah.
Maybe so. Okay. So they're known as a nation known for its democracy. It's not run by a king. It's got the chancellor and then the council, which all of the major guilds, the head of that guild has a seat on the council.
Yeah, from like the artist guild to the warrior guild. There's all the different. I think so.
Was it metalworking or groundworking? Stone.
Stone guilders. Yeah. Stone.
So for a while, they've been a very peaceful nation.
Right.
So that's something that they're known for and their dedication to the arts.
Yay.
Like I said, Jovan and his sister Kalina are... their family history is that of protecting the Chancellor from poisons and death by... plants.
Right. Not nearly the story. Well, the story does focus on that. It's not, I don't remember. Was it Poison Study? Was that the name of the books we read forever ago? That was about a girl who got like conscripted to be the poison taste tester.
She was to be executed. So she got chosen as a poison tester.
Right. It's not the same, and I'm comparing it to that just because that one little thing.
Yeah, those are oranges and apples.
Those are 100% because this one is a lot more, it's our duty to protect leaders. This is what we do. Like you said in the synopsis, the first time my uncle poisoned me was when I was 7.
Yeah.
It was because
his training began.
Yeah, his training began. That was his training, was to be poisoned and see if you could handle it.
Yeah. So probably the most interesting thing to me, I felt like, was the family dynamics.
Yeah.
So there's a heavy importance on uncles.
Yeah, for some reason.
Are you not feeling this?
No.
As an uncle, are you not feeling this?
I don't.
Is it important?
Uncles aren't important. No. No, I can definitely agree with the book. It's definitely mothers and uncles are focused upon. There isn't really a whole lot of talk about marriage or fathers.
Looking back, husbands. I cannot think of a single marriage reference.
No.
In the book at all.
Because the two main characters are brother and sister. I don't think they ever talk about their father.
And then they're like the Chancellor's heir is his nephew.
Right.
And then Jovan's and Kalina's father figure
was their uncle.
They're called Tashi. Instead of uncle, they're just called Tashi.
They're called Tashi, yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely weird. It
sounds like when like the mom can have a kid with whoever she wants to. It doesn't matter.
Party time. Because
Kalina mentions at one point that she's expected to start producing children, and she makes a comment to the effect of, "I could find a lover just about anywhere, but I'm not ready for that yet." So there's no sense of have
no traditional marriage values.
Yeah, no traditional marriage values at all. There's no relationship necessary. I'm sure there can be.
Yeah,
but there's none necessary. But then once the child is born, it's raised by the mother, but more importantly, an uncle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's said at one point that if some other kids were raised without a Tashi and therefore without honor.
So, I was just about to say, I was like, if you don't have an uncle, are you just screwed?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Jeez. Talk about pressure on the grandparents.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. Like you just keep going, popping out girls till you have a boy and then you're done.
Can you imagine that family that had like kept trying to have a girl? Like our grandfather, he had 13 brothers and one sister. What if it was the other way around? 14.
There's 16 kids total. The very youngest was a girl.
Yeah. What if it was the other way around that they kept trying to have a boy?
Yeah.
And it kept being girl. And they're like, no, all of their kids can't go without an uncle. The final one's finally a boy.
Yeah.
That poor guy. He'd have all those kids to have to mentor, and he's probably younger than most of them. But yeah, that is interesting.
It's
I haven't seen that before. And I wonder what Tashi is, if that's, is that an Eastern culture kind of word?
I got a bit of a sense of Eastern or Middle Eastern
culture,
a little bit.
That's what I mean. It never really goes heavy into any of it where it's like, oh yeah, this is definitely Eastern culture book. But just words like Tashi and different words used throughout the book definitely kind of felt.
It kind of had that flavor, but I don't think it was meant to be that. The cover,
yeah,
pull it up. It kind of, of course, it's going to be really tiny.
Oh, that'll work, yeah.
Okay, there's not much. Okay, there's not much on the cover that would indicate.
No, not. I mean, the dagger's kind of in the shape of. Curved. It's kind of curved, which would be usually a lot of Middle Eastern cultures. Their swords are have that curved kind of look to it.
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting, a different way to look at it. Because speaking of the culture as well, the way it feels different. Wasn't the enemy army? I know is a big problem at one point. The Dashi, I think they're called
Dofri.
See that again, that doesn't even, that right there doesn't sound Eastern.
No, I think it's more a culture entirely of its own. I think it maybe pulls inspiration from different many ones. Different cultures.
Okay.
Without being specifically based on anything in particular.
Yeah, and it doesn't, and in no way does it feel like it's a bunch of them mashed together.
No.
It doesn't. It just, it pulls little stuff here and there and is its own thing.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's definitely an interesting family dynamic setup.
I can't imagine how inheritance might get tricky with that.
Yeah, that could get weird.
I guess maybe not. Like, I mean, you think about the chancellor, he has his one heir.
Yeah.
And.
But what if he has two sons?
Well, he wouldn't have sons. They're his nephews. So it would still be by age.
Yeah. But if he had. What if he. Okay, what if there was a family of three brothers, though?
Like, again,
well, no.
Who gets to be the Tashi?
Yeah, who gets to be the Tashi? Say all three of them have kids. Who gets to be the Tashi? Is it the eldest? Is it? Yeah, I don't know.
Screw the murder mystery. Let's talk about family.
Let's get
trees.
Into this. I've been doing a lot of D&D, so I'm thinking about this kind of stuff a lot lately.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering it on and off throughout the series too.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the book throughout
the book. She's already read the whole series, guys.
I have.
Yeah, because there's one point, and I'm terrible with the names, but our main character, Jovan and his sister,
Kalina.
I know she was passed over to be the protector because she went through started the training to see if she could handle it.
Her body couldn't handle
And her body couldn't handle the poison. So that makes me think, because she's his older sister, that it might go by age.
Purely
it might go by, yeah,
if
the firstborn. Firstborn first. Yeah. Now that's a curious thing. Is it always have to be uncles, or can it be females too? It sounds like it's all uncles.
It sounds like
yeah.
It's always a brother of the mother.
I don't want this kind of responsibility. I don't like this.
You don't want that?
I don't want that. I'm going to have enough tough time with my own kids. I don't have to take care of somebody else's too. I don't know anything either, so I can teach you how to read.
But that whole, you know, if you don't have a Tashi, you're raised without honor. I felt like later in the book, and it wasn't directly related to that, but there was a major challenge of what does it mean for something to be honorable.
Okay.
So I felt like that idea was challenged a little bit, was, okay, you're raised in a particular parental situation. Mm-hmm. One is not inherently less honorable than the other.
Right.
And the talks about honor, I don't remember them ever tying directly into that, but I think it was Jovan having the conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, his idea of honor was challenged multiple times later on.
Right, right. Interesting.
And that, like, early in the book, I felt like there was a big theme of what is a government's responsibility to their people, which the answer I felt like is kind of obvious. Like, don't let them die if you can help it is kind of like a baseline kind of thing.
Standing over your castle wall, just kind of looking down, they're dying. What?
More wine.
More wine. Let them have cake.
Cake fixes everything.
I might be doing something wrong. Oh, man. Yeah, no, I can see that. I can definitely see the parallels with where should your government step in, or what should they do? I can see that.
I'm a sucker for themes like that. So yep. I did enjoy that. So characters, we've kind of talked about Jovan and Kalina a little bit. There's also Tane, who's the chancellor's heir.
Right.
So as the chancellor's poisoned very early in the book, he's a very young chancellor trying to step into his responsibilities.
Big shoes, yeah. Big shoes to fill.
I liked all of these characters.
Yeah.
I will say I enjoyed reading their points of view. Of course, I don't think we ever saw Tane's point of view, but
I
enjoyed
all,
reading about him.
Right.
But at the same time, I couldn't really say they stood out very much from the multitude of other fantasy characters.
Yeah, there wasn't anything about any of them that made me remember them.
Yeah, okay, so Tane is the young chancellor trying to step into his role.
Yeah.
He kind of figures it out kind of quickly. There's not... There's some talk of other council members trying to take advantage of his youth and...
Inexperience.
And inexperience.
Yeah.
But that didn't really come into play too much.
Mm.
So it was there, but it wasn't a big deal. So it wasn't a major theme. Jovan is, I mean, he's the best friend of Tane, so he acts like it.
Yeah, he rolls his eyes, but at the same time, he's his protector, and he takes care of him, and he's constantly trying to help him.
Kalina is, I mean, like I said, she's, her health is very frail.
Yeah.
She's constantly sick, it seems like.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's, I mean, there's, in, from her, I guess, there's a little bit of a theme of, physical strength is not the only kind of strength.
Right, right.
Throughout the book. Other than that, I don't really have a whole lot to say about her.
Yeah, unfortunately, with all three of the characters for me, they're all kind of, the best word I can think of, and it sounds harsh, is bland. They do have characteristics. They do have things that make them individuals. And I'll fully admit I didn't finish the book. I tried to. But especially since it was an audiobook, I had trouble sticking with it. And maybe because the beginning was a little too slow, and it was just hard for me to keep traction. I just felt like there was a lot of talking. Even when things were happening, it was a lot of talking. And it was discussing what was going on and constant. And it makes sense for this book. I mean, it is a murder whodunit, with a little bit of political intrigue going on. So there is that more style. So if that is your style, it fits. For me, it was just an okay town, an okay culture, an okay plot with okay characters. So with these characters, they all have their own distinct personalities, but nothing grabbed me. Nothing made me go, I want to know more about that one. Like with the sister, with her being frail and her not passing through the trials to become a protector, that was interesting, and that was definitely characteristic and definitely set up for possible character building throughout the book, character growth to be done. But for both the heir of the chancellor and for Jovan, the V, I didn't from what I saw, and of course I didn't finish the book. But from what I saw, I didn't see room for character growth for either. Like, this is who they are. They're in a situation. All right, I've got it. Let's go. I didn't see character growth. Her, I could.
Them, I couldn't. There was some for either of them. Of course, Kalina was very decided on her own strength.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there wasn't a whole lot of growth there. Like, there was no finding that strength because she already knew she had it in her, even though she's physically weak.
Okay.
There's with Jovan, there was a little bit of the, altering his opinion of what honor is a little bit.
Okay.
But that was relatively minor as far as character growth goes. There was nothing major. I've already talked about Tane a little bit. So, like, the characters were okay. I didn't hate them.
No, nothing bad about
them. I enjoyed
them.
Reading about them.
Yeah.
They just didn't...
Stand out.
They just didn't stand out as much as some others.
Yeah.
In other books.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying character growth is everything about a story, but for me personally, characters make a book for me.
You can tell the same story that's been told 10,000 times if you do it with very engaging characters.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your characters can make or break your book. And I want to emphasize,
These
guys are not bad characters.
They're not. You could probably read it, and I've seen reviewers on Goodreads who perfectly loved them, who had their own reasons for loving them and enjoying them. For me personally, I just didn't click with them.
Like you said, as far as like the pacing of the story, there is lots of talking. That actually didn't bother me. The pacing of the book didn't bother me too much.
Yeah.
And the fact that there was talking kind of helped me a little bit.
Oh, did it?
Because it was an audiobook, so the constant shift in the voices being used by the same narrator.
Right.
It helped keep my attention. For some reason, like the shifting just helped keep me there. It was part of it.
Okay.
The thing, I was disappointed by the ending.
Yeah, it just wasn't.
Yeah.
Anticlimactic, would that be a word?
Kind of. I felt like there weren't enough answers. There were answers as to who did it and kind of a why, but the how was kind of open, unless I just totally missed it.
Yeah.
The how was kind of glossed over. And, okay, I'm going to say the how was very glossed over, actually.
The more you think about it.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the how and the mechanics of everything, I felt like, okay, you know, I, that makes sense, but how was it done more specifically?
Right, because especially with these style of books, with the whodunit kind of stuff, you want to know how. That's why you're reading. That's why you're going with the story, is because I want to get the juicy bits of how they did it. How do they, you know, have the characters go through and find out. So
this, like, for example, the specific poison that was used to kill the Chancellor is never revealed. Like I said, we figure out who did it, but what poison it was not talked about, like I said, unless I just totally missed it.
Yeah, that, just imagine that in a movie. Just be like, someone pops up, I have the cure. Oh, really? For what? That thing they have.
That poison. What thing that's killing them.
How do you know what the cure for the thing? I don't know the name of it, but this will work. How do you know?
Yeah. For it being so mystery heavy, the final solution being a little disappointing is a big coloring, I feel like, on the story for me.
I can see that with this style of book. You need that closing, a good closing.
Because there were answers, just not enough of them. And the ones that were missing, I don't feel like it's going to be a continuing mystery for the series.
Okay,
like, I don't feel like Jovan's going to continue looking for what that specific poison was.
He's got an antidote. He's good. He's going to move on. Yeah, I could see that. So
unless I totally missed it, there's a good possibility that I zoned out for 3 minutes at the exact wrong 3 minutes.
You do bump that. Eventually, you do bump that audible up to like times two. So
it was at 1.8. I finished it this time.
It sounds like chipmunks at one point, just going.
You just need to listen more carefully.
That's true. It's also true. So would you say with this book, it was, I don't know why this analogy came to me, but like a person at the Olympics doing gymnastics, the setup, the flip, everything was really good, but the landing, they may have just misstepped a little bit.
Just didn't stick the landing. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Everything else was good. It was interesting, but a little wobbly at the end.
Yeah.
There you go.
I like it.
I made a good analogy.
That's fantastic. Okay.
I just think of analogies. I think of Bo Burnham. When he was doing the poetry about the turtle, and he was like, some of my analogies are a little weird at times, so just go with them. At one point, he was like, and like a turtle that got shot in the chest with a rifle, the turtle got shot in the chest with a rifle.
Beautiful. Yes. Absolutely beautiful. Yes,
gorgeous. Go watch Bo Burnham. He's funny.
So I think that about does it.
Yeah.
For the review of City of Lies by Sam Hawk.
Have you guys listened to it or read it? Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. The narrators, I think, did a really good
job. They did fine. Yeah, they sounded good. Yeah. Neither of them were a problem at all.
The audiobook is definitely recommended for it. That was good. The only thing I'll say, because there was the Dofri religion, before we recorded, I had to go back to the audiobook and find it, because I could not for the life of me remember what it was called.
And see, that's when I heard you having it up to the 1.8, because maybe the highest I've done is 1.5, and that's good enough for me, and I can get through it. You were playing it over there, and you were like listening, and all I heard was, and you were just like, okay, yep, got it. And I'm like, what? When? Scribble, 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 that's all I got.
Close enough.
Yes.
Close enough.
All right.
So, yeah, next week, Spellslinger by Sebastian de Castell. Very much looking forward to that. And if you have read City of Lies, or if you have read Spellslinger already, and you want to tell us what you think, you can find us on Twitter at BookGeeksUNC, Facebook at TwoBookGeeks. We have our website at BookGeeksUNC.com.
As well as, don't forget about Audible. You can get that free 30 days and one free book at audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. Help out the show. Help us read more books. I already have confidence in this book. Nicholas Seams is on the back. So.
Well, perfect.
Yep. He said it is the start of something truly special. He is a master of breakneck pacing, dagger-sharp dialogue, and twist you didn't see coming.
All right, let's do this. I'm excited now. See everybody in 2 weeks with Spellslinger.
Oh my gosh. See you later.